the word intelligence, most people think of how smart someone is, how much knowledge they have, or what their IQ score is. There's an entirely different kind of intelligence, however, one that the person in front of me would say is probably even more important, particularly in being able to become more successful, working with, and leading people. That intelligence is called emotional intelligence, or EQ. Dr. Jean Greaves is the co-author of the book Emotional Intelligence 2.0. She's also the co-founder and CEO of the company TalentSmart, which helps businesses build the EQ of their team members. And that's exactly what she's going to do with us here today, to help us understand and build our own EQ so we can use it to build successful teams and successful businesses. Dr. Greaves, welcome to Success. Delighted to have you with us today.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
So many of our listeners have heard the term emotional intelligence before, also known as EQ, but give us your definition so that we're clear about what it is that we're going to be talking about here.
Certainly. It's a person's ability to understand their emotions as they happen and to manage them productively, in addition to maneuvering through social situations that get complicated or challenging.
So again, I want to set the context so that everybody listening to this goes, okay, this is going to be really important information. Tell me, what happens if somebody has low EQ and what the benefits are when they can raise the EQ? Just what are some of the outcomes so that we can at least give them a vision of the better them that they'll be after the end of our discussion?
Right. EQ is the foundation of so many key skills that matter in business. Having a high emotional intelligence will allow them to manage their time, to speak appropriately to the audience and connect with them well, to make decisions at the right time, to be able to read what's happening to the person that you're interacting with and understand how to phrase your message so that they can embrace it. Any type of soft skill, those are the terms we use for those kinds of leadership competencies, someone with vision, someone with the ability to maneuver through a tough negotiation, those people are utilizing emotional intelligence skills, even though they may not be able to name it.
Good, good. So later I do want to get into how we can develop those skills, because that's what we're after, is improvement in those areas. But I want to take a look at something you did here. You did a study that found that only 36% of people are able to accurately identify their emotions as they happen. Explain why that percentage is so low and why.
One of the reasons is our culture does not weave in intentional development around this in our school system. We spend 15, 20 years of our life learning facts and figures to be able to choose a profession and enter the work that we're going to spend doing as a lifetime. Now, some people get lucky because they grow up in a family who give them a language around their emotions and how to handle them when they arise. But for the most part, our population is one that does not have words to put in to use when something is overwhelming them.
Hmm. What percentage would you say is EQ responsible for performance when it comes to entrepreneurialism or in terms of job performance as well? What would be the percentages you would give to those two outcomes?
Right. We find in our research that emotional intelligence accounts for 60% of someone's performance. And that might sound hard to believe, but there's a key reason why. And that is because your IQ, by the time you've entered your profession, has leveled out to be quite similar to most of the other people in the same type of job that you have. It's a level playing field. So once someone enters a profession like how to be a physician or a lawyer, you can name whatever profession you can think of. And those that begin to stand out are the ones that utilize what they know and how they maneuver and conduct themselves in their profession through other people. And once you take out all the influences that have to do with profession and demographics, like your age and your gender and your personality, we find that the differences between high performers and low performers are accounted for by 60% of these emotional intelligence skills.
So now you have my attention. If I want a competitive advantage, this is where to focus my time and energy, because this is where I could really find the distinctions to find those areas of improvement that could really make the difference in my being able to be successful in the marketplace of the competitive landscape, whichever landscape I'm focused on. So that's great. Okay. So you emphasize in your work that emotional intelligence is comprised of four different skills. So let's walk through those briefly. Talk to me about the first skill.
The first skill is self-awareness. It's a person's ability to recognize what's happening to them in the moment. Self-awareness can be comprised of someone saying, over the course of this last month, I noticed in the mornings I was feeling down. So what I did is made sure that I built in exercise at the beginning of the day. Someone who is stressed out at work might say, yes, I know that when I'm stressed, I tend to rush through decisions. So I'm going to ask for an extra day to think about it, because over the last 2 days, I know that the stress has been quite high. That's an example of someone who's being self-aware.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm a big believer that we end up developing habit patterns. 95% of our decisions and choices are done through habit, unconsciously, like we're sleepwalking. So first is getting some self-awareness. That's great. So then once we have that awareness, what do we do next? What's the next skill?
The next skill is self-managing. Self-managing is choosing what to do with what you've just become aware of. So an example of self-management in action could be a manager in a team meeting who's talking with their staff, and they're pressing this manager for, when are we going to be hearing about the next decision? The manager may already know some insights and new information, but they choose not to share it with the team on that particular meeting because they know that the right people aren't in the room. Now, it's fun to be the savior or the hero and to share with them what you know. It's almost a sense of power, but being smart about who needs to hear it and when can buy themselves some time. That's an example of a self-management skill, is saying, I'm excited to share with you the news as soon as it's made, and when we have the right people to convene, I'll pull you all together and share with you what that information is.
Great. Okay, so once we become aware and we're doing the introspection to become self-managed, I imagine that we now need to go outside of ourselves. So walk us through the last two skills.
The last two skills are social awareness and relationship management. Social awareness is my ability to read with what is happening with the person I'm interacting with at the time, and being able to check in and confirm that and use that information to build and maintain and foster a relationship with the other person over the course of a month or a year or however long I work with that person.
So let's take this a step further. Help us determine our own EQ. Tell us what steps we should take to see if our EQ is either high or low.
The best first step is to self-assess. We use that term because we use online tests to allow people to answer these questions about how they operate during their day. So these are questions of, how often are you a person who can be counted on? Or how often do you contribute to the difficult situations that you encounter? These are examples of emotional intelligence behaviors. And someone can simply go through a series of questions, answer them, and begin to get an idea of which of these four skills they have an extra strength in and which ones they need to work on. If a person does not have access to taking an assessment, they can ask the key people around them, like their friends, families, and coworkers.
Okay, so we've determined our emotional intelligence. Maybe some of us have low EQ. I want to really give some tools for people to start making some improvements here. Since the skills of EQ are so important, let's go through a strategy or two for each skill that we can do to help raise our EQ level overall. So starting with self-awareness, give us a couple of strategies for improving this skill.
Okay, there are two for self-awareness that I like to give people from the start. One is called to just simply check yourself. As we arrive for a meeting, as we enter a restaurant, as we meet up with friends or coworkers, we often check ourselves in the mirror for, how does our lipstick look, or how does our jacket set on our shoulders, but we forget to notice how our mood is coming across, how our posture is emitting some type of a message to the other person that I'm here and I'm ready and I'm present. So a quick thing is to just be aware of how you're coming across throughout your day. We call it watch yourself like a hawk. The second one is called leaning into your discomfort. When a mood surfaces, like you're beginning to feel frustrated, it may be the kind of feeling that you've felt before, you hate it when it surfaces, and you've decided that the minute it begins, you're going to basically walk away from it, try to get in a better mood, go talk to that friend who's funny down the hallway, and move on with your day. Leaning into discomfort means you actually notice that you feel frustrated and find the moment to say to yourself, where is this coming from? Because every emotion we have is there to inform you. So if you can lean into your discomfort, ask yourself why it's surfacing, that begins to give you the tools about what to do next.
I like that. So we call it game filming, which is, you know, post-action, post-activity, you review the game film to see how you did. And then the future visioning, which is sort of imagining how you want to be in the future situation. And then there's the old adage of, you know, how do your parents know how to push all your buttons? And the answer is because they put them there, right?
So, right.
Yeah. So certainly observe that and ask yourself why this is coming up. So great advice there. Okay, so let's move into self-management now. Give us a strategy too that will make the biggest difference to our self-management skills.
Okay, maybe I should stick with your example. Your parents learned how to push your buttons, or maybe a big sister or a big brother. So now you are an adult in new settings, and someone says something that triggers a frustrating or a defensive reaction on your part. The more aware you've become now that you're watching these things happen, you now have a choice about what to do about it. So in the moment, you can actually chuckle and say, you know, the way you just said that reminded me of conversations I used to have with my sister. Just by saying that out loud gives you time to sort of allow that frustration to wash over your back. Think to yourself, this is not my sister saying this to me, and choose to move on with what you were going to say next before feeling frustrated. So self-management strategies is buy some time to think. The other is to notice the type of dialogue that goes on in your head. Self-management can either contribute to you feeling worse, or it can begin to change how you feel about a moment. So maybe a completely different example, or quite universal one, is when people have to speak publicly. The type of dialogue that goes in their mind as they walk up on stage can tell them, okay, you're going to do fine. Focus on what you're going to say. You're well prepared, versus the other person who's telling themselves, don't mess this up. There's too much riding on it. You know you're going to regret it if you make a mistake. Those kinds of thoughts actually contribute to either making those mistakes you worry about or altering and doing it really well.
Mm, good. I like that. Buying some time. I did a meditation course for over a weekend at the Chopra Center a while ago, and the meditation teacher said you meditate to build a little bit of that, what he called sattva, which is the pause between action and reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're all cranked up, there's not much time between there, between action and reaction. So you want to actually kind of let the pot steam boil down a little bit so that there's that space between action and reaction where you get to choose a different response rather than just being fully wound up in reaction. I like your strategy for doing that as well. Okay, so the next skill from our four skills is social awareness. Tell us what we could do to improve our social awareness.
Social awareness is being able to calm all the thoughts in our minds so that we're able to actually pick up on all the information coming to us from our outside world. Being socially aware is noticing someone's body language, being able to listen to what they're saying, the tone of how they're saying it, and the mood in the room. If we're talking about a collective group of people, is the noise really loud and happy, or is there sort of a muted sense and feeling going on? Our minds and bodies have a great ability to pick up on sort of these gut reactions. So being socially aware is taking the time and wherewithal to tune into that and notice what is that telling you? Does this energize you when you walk into this situation, or do you feel fear? And that begins to tell you what you're up against. Now, when you're talking with one-on-one with another person, social awareness means asking questions as well. Just because you're listening and observing may not mean that you're going to always be correct, but you can lean over and ask to someone else. Now, are you picking up on what I'm picking up on? Because I'm getting the sense that people are feeling nervous today.
Great, great. Well, another point for the meditation teacher, you talked about quieting your mind and being able to now be more perceptive as a result of that. This past year, I set this goal to just record 50 sunsets, because if I went and saw the sunset, what I was doing was actually practicing the bigger goal, which was spending 30 minutes to do nothing but just quiet my mind. And it's amazing the perceptivity increase that you get when your mind is not just filled with all this frenetic energy and you actually take the time and space to kind of let, again, the steam come down within the boiling pot.
Right.
Okay, so the final skill we can improve is relationship management. Give us your two best strategies to help us create relationships with staying power.
So one of the strategies that I find is very useful is an open communication style where you put yourself into the relationship and begin to share who you are with the other person first rather than waiting for others to open up with you. You can be mindful, you can take your own time, but beginning to share who you are and how you think begins to build. Now, everyone has difficulties in relationships, so what do you do when conflicts occur? The best strategy for a relationship is what we call is building a repair. So during a broken conversation, that moment when both of you are feeling angry or quite disappointed in each other, and you've just said things that are hard to hear, a repair is something along the lines are, we have faced this before. I know we can get through this. I don't think this is the moment to resolve this conversation, but I'm going to think about it and I'm going to come back with some suggestions. That would be an example of it's okay that this is a tough moment. It's okay that we're feeling this way, but I believe in what is going to come from the next conversation. And it gives the other person a reason to stay in it for a positive outcome.
Hmm. I always thought relationship repair with my wife was jewelry.
Yes, I think the words can be just as significant and it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I like your suggestion. All right, so we have strategies for improving our EQ, but how long does it typically take to develop our EQ to a level of top performer? Tell us what we can expect along the way.
Initially, when someone's working on a skill that is reflected with many bad habits built over a lifetime, we literally see marked improvement within a couple of months. This could be the top executive or that entrepreneur maverick who is known for being brusque with people. Simple things like beginning to say hello to others in the elevator or remembering to ask how someone's weekend had been when they knew they were going to get together with their families. Those have tremendous impact on the people around them. And those are the kind of results people begin to see within the first few weeks. Significant change at the sort of what you call brain synapses level begin to surface at the 5 to 6 month level. Simply by practicing these skills, being more aware of your patterns, trying to either speak up when you know you should and you've historically been silent, or keeping your mouth shut when you fly off the handle and say whatever comes to mind. Those kinds of things begin to form new habits within 6 months, or as I mentioned earlier, about 50 different practice trials is what we call them. So not all that long. And someone who is at literally the top of their game has probably faced a more challenging use of their skills over a period of about a year or two. So it's a lot shorter than I think what people believe. They think, well, I've never been good with people. It's going to take me a decade to get better at this. In our research, we show that people actually increase in their emotional intelligence scores about 2 or 3 points with every decade of life. So even if you're not intentionally working on these things, you're likely going to be a lot better at this in your 40s and 50s than you were in your 20s.
Hmm. So I'd love for you to share an example of a business where you worked with them and developed high levels of EQ from the top down and what their results were. So just give us kind of a picture into a case study.
Yes, we have a current client that has hotels located all over California, and the CEO there has invested in emotional intelligence like no other client we've watched over time. He has certified in-house management to be able to run sessions with all of their staff, right on down to the Spanish-speaking dishwashers and Chinese-speaking staff. And over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, they're establishing a method for no matter which staff level person, to connect with guests and increase their experiences, to recognize that people sometimes arrive in a harried mindset. They were late, their planes got in the way. Any type of thing that gets a person riled up, they don't react to, oh, I have to make it go away, or I have to argue with this person. It's to embrace that emotions are normal, and let me allow this person, this client of ours, to get to a place where they can enjoy themselves here at our location. And one of the interesting things that the CEO has done is we have utilized watching people in action, and we've utilized movie clips for them to see this. And the CEO has gotten involved to the point where he is selecting movies in Spanish languages and Chinese languages to allow people to watch these situations behaviorally and to begin to study what is this actor doing really well and what did they not do and how does that apply to how we interact with our guests and give them time to practice it in a group setting. He's asked everyone to assess their own emotional intelligence, and then pinpoint a couple of things that they need to work on, and then given them time over a course of, say, a year and a half to get out there and practice, come back for additional group sessions, practice a little bit more, ask questions, share stories with each other, and then get back out and practice once again. Once in a while, they'll utilize expertise for some one-on-one coaching, but for the most part, this peer guidance from one another is all that anyone really needs to do to really make a significant difference. And they're finding that their guest satisfaction scores are going up across locations.
So to wrap things up, we've talked about a lot of great strategies to increase each of the skills that are associated with our emotional intelligence. But give us two things that we can do and should do today so that we have something to get us started with that will help us begin the process of building our overall emotional intelligence.
Okay, the first thing is someone should take out a piece of paper and just draw a circle in the middle of it and put their own name or just write the word me and begin to write down the names around that center circle of significant relationships in a person's life. So they might have a circle that says my coworkers and my children or the piano teacher that I have, or this mentor that I have in another department, all of the significant relationships in their life, and highlight which ones are troublesome and which ones are going well. And number two, spot the person that they trust and think that they could schedule a lunch with and have a conversation with them about how do you see me coming across? Do you think that I have a good handle on how I conduct myself when I'm feeling emotional? Do you think I have a good way with dealing with others when they need me to? And hear what that other person says. So map out the significant relationships that you want to practice your emotional intelligence with and schedule a lunch or a breakfast with a trusted feedback friend.
Great advice. Sounds dangerous, but great advice. Dr. Graves, appreciate your time and the emotion that you've shared with us here today. I look forward to raising my own EQ level. I'm sure everybody around me looks forward to me raising my EQ level. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.